I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7. RocketMortgage.com, their home to yours. The team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Coming up in about 20 minutes from now, we are stunned to a news. We're also talking about the weekend that was in sport. And yes, we had some action. We had Tiger and Phil and Peyton and Tom Brady golfing yesterday for COVID-19 relief. We had a NASCAR race in Bundesliga yet again. We had the debut of the Lance Armstrong documentary last night. And we have all of the leagues, NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, trying to put forth plans to come back. I think this week is a big week for a lot of those leagues to do exactly that. And coming up in 40 minutes, will 4th and 15 in the NFL circles end up passing as a proposal this week? That's coming up this hour on the show. Of course, it is Memorial Day, an important day to remember those who we have lost and their families as well. So keep in your thoughts today and in your mind as you may have the day off. Maybe you're gathering with friends or family for Memorial Day and the holiday to remember what today is for. Now, I think that it's interesting to note, I found this to be pretty interesting, that this week I think we're going to get some clear vision of how NHL, NBA is going to try to come back. I think the NHL is going to try to come back with an expanded postseason. That's what it sounds like, where instead of the traditional 16 teams, 8 on each side of the ledger, you're going to have 24 teams, 12 on each side. And how that would work is the top 4 seeds in the East and the West would have a bye in the first round. That would leave the bottom 4 teams and then the next 4. So imagine if you seeded right now 1 through 12 on each side, West and East, that 5 through 12 would play one another in an opening round. The winner of those get fed into the next round, where the first 4 seeds, 1, 2, 3, 4, are already there via bye. And then it's the traditional 1, 8, 2, 7, 3, 6, 4, 5, kind of. Of course, those seeds might be different based on who wins those opening round games, but just so you could envision in your mind what that bracket looks like. That's how the NHL is going to try to come back with a 2-city system, basically. I think it's going to be Chicago and Las Vegas, it sounds like, the 2 different pods where the East and the West would play. So I think this week the NHL is going to roll out this proposal and get buy-in from the NHL players and try to come back in July. Probably, since we're already nearing the end of May, that they're going to plan for some type of protocols in place by mid-June and again try to get players back playing some type of somewhat of a training camp and then get them back on the ice by July is what I would imagine for a 2-month run, July and August. Maybe it's August and September, but probably July and August, and then you're done for a month or two and then might come back a little bit later for the next season in the fall. The NBA sounds like they're going to get their plans together for the Disney World option, the Wide World of Sports. There's apparently three different facilities that are larger basketball facilities that could handle the TV purposes that they need, of course. It would be everybody on campus, if you will. So there's a lot of hotels, obviously, for players and their families. So players and their families would be in Orlando at Disney, living there in a compound, if you will, and like a basketball village, which would be kind of an interesting social experiment. I don't know if I love the idea of NBA players with other players' wives all in the same walking distance across the entire league, but, you know, who knows? Maybe that'll just be totally fine. Basketball village. So you have that. And then you have baseball, who haven't even gotten to the X's and O's of trying to come back because they're still worried and bleeding about money. They're just badgering each other about the finances of it, which is just so annoying from a baseball standpoint. You know, the NBA and the NHL, they have players associations as well. They have unions as well. And that has not been a problem. You know, I don't think that every player in the NBA or NHL loves the owners. I don't think they have complete trust in the owners. But there just isn't this history of being petulant and catty and just at each other's throats as much. And I'm not saying it's all on the Major League Baseball players, but the relationship between the owners of the players in baseball is the worst out of all of our sports. It's the absolute dregs. And the NBA gets in a conference call with Adam Silver, and Silver reaches directly out to the stars. Giannis, Chris Paul, LeBron, I want to hear from you guys. What do you think? And those players, by and large, said, we want to play. Okay. The NHL, I think those players, look, they're hockey players. They want a cup run. They want the postseason. This is what they live for. So they're like, let's do it. Let's get back onto the ice. You know, and baseball players and the Baseball Association distrust the owners, hate the owners. The owners have no history of goodwill. And so it's just broken. And so, you know, you have these other leagues coming back and setting up when they're going to come back. Baseball right now is in the middle of its season and can't get past money to even get to how we will get a season in. It's pathetic. So pathetic. And I would imagine, look, MLS is right next to the NBA and the NHL because soccer is back internationally, being played in Germany, going to be played next month in Spain, likely to be played next month in the UK as well. I know across seas is different from here, but everything that Bundesliga is doing is what MLS can do. No fans, home stadiums, lots of testing, pumping some crowd noise, away we go. And here's baseball that can't even get past the money of it. Well, who makes what? Great. So we've also talked so much about The Last Dance, and it kind of feels like The Last Dance was a sporting event. And now, even now, we have stories and news being made around The Last Dance. This is a story told by Jason Hare, who we had on to preview the series. We then reached out to a mid-series, and Hare never got back to us, which is disappointing because I really wanted to follow up with some of the things that I saw that I didn't love in the documentary and ask him, well, why was it like this? Why was it like that? I don't know if Hare was overwhelmed. I don't know if he was just ducking us. I don't know if he knew that I was critical of it. I don't know, but he did not respond to our multiple requests to come on the show once the series started. But in an appearance on the Pushing Through podcast, Jason Hare said that there was a story that they did not get into the series, but was a really interesting story. That this was told to Hare by Pat Riley. Pat Riley and Michael Jordan, after one of the seasons in the early 90s where the Bulls and Knicks met up, either 92 or 93, both those years the Bulls outlasted the Knicks, Pat Riley and Michael Jordan were staying at the same Hawaiian resort. Riley said they were staying in a presidential suite, or Riley was staying in a presidential suite at this gorgeous resort in Hawaii. And the manager calls him up and says, "Mr. Riley, you have to clear your things out of the presidential suite. We have an unexpected guest. We have to move you out. We'll give you these free other rooms. They're beautiful rooms. We'll spread you out. We'll relocate everything for you, but we have to do this." Riley goes down to the pool. The staff comes up, moves out all of his stuff, and he's hanging out down by the pool, looks up at the balcony of his old room, and Michael's on the balcony waving to him from his original room. So Michael, with either not knowing that Pat Riley was in there or specifically knowing, got Riley booted because Michael was the bigger star. Now, it's pretty amazing that Pat Riley, at the height of the Knicks' powers in the early 90s, and being, you know, Pat Riley, who had coached the Lakers to, I think, four of their five Showtime Lakers championships, pretty amazing that freaking Pat Riley, who's still freaking Pat Riley after Showtime Lakers and the head coach of the Knicks on national TV every single week, would be the type of guy that's not a big enough celebrity so that he got bumped out. I mean, I would think that you keep Pat Riley there because you know what is Pat Riley. I can't believe you bump out anybody of Pat Riley stature from anywhere in 1993. But Michael, yes, is the bigger star, and it makes you wonder if Michael Jordan knew that it was Pat Riley in there, asked who was staying in the presidential suite. Oh, it's only Pat. Yeah, you know what? I need to be in there because that's the type of guy that Michael was, to turn the screws to every one of his opponents and his adversaries. And the Knicks at that time was perhaps his biggest adversary. Mirage, you've got a really big problem with this because this is going against the sanctity of the vacation.
Yeah, look, it's one thing if it's some Wall Street broker that's in the presidential suite, but if you're this resort, first and foremost, Pat Riley is a very big deal. He has paid for this suite. He is in your suite at your resort. You can't allow walk-ups. I don't care if it's Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. You can't allow a walk-up to go, "No, I need that suite. Get him out." Unless it's, you know, the president in the presidential suite where it's real security needed. That also being said, if you're Pat Riley, there is not a spine in your body if after that moment on your vacation that you've worked hard to have, for you to ever speak to Michael Jordan again, look at Michael Jordan in a positive light again, if he's waving from that balcony down at you and you realize, "Wait a minute, I had to pack up all my stuff as Pat Riley while I'm on vacation and move rooms, and basically shift down to a continental breakfast for Michael Jordan to take my room." I know it's funny and it's like it's a good story for me to chew on, but if you're Pat Riley, you can never, ever, ever speak to Jordan again, and you have to honestly have that screw you attitude that Jordan had when he took your room because he screwed up your vacation. Could you imagine DA being on vacation and the hotel calls you 2 days into being on the trip? "Hey, pack up all your stuff. You've settled. Throw your toothbrush back in your little Ziploc bag. We got to move your rooms. We have somebody bigger who needs this room." You'd be furious, and you're you and I'm me. You're Pat Riley, and you're being kicked out of the room for Michael Jordan? Get lost. Never again would I look at Michael again. Never.
Especially because that would have been after Michael eliminated him in the playoffs.
Yes. Yes. Look, that might be funny for Michael. That would not be funny for me if I'm Pat. And I'm telling you, today, if that happened to me, I still wouldn't respect Michael Jordan or look at him the same way. And frankly, this wouldn't be a Schwartz IHOP situation either. I said, "I'm not good enough for your room. Where are we? Hawaii or whatever? I am taking my bags. I'm going to another resort because I'm not going to give you any of my money for kicking me out of my room either." I think the resort's at fault as well. Pat Riley, spineless for sitting there and taking this.
Is it a jerk move by Michael Jordan to bump somebody out of the presidential suite? Forget
yes.
If he knew it was Pat Riley or not. Should Jordan have just said, "You know what, just give me whatever you have free here"?
Yes. Yes, that's what he should have done if he was a regular person. Now, and when you're Michael Jordan and you get that power hungry and you are used to staying at the top of the line of everything, my assumption also, DA, is that Pat Riley and Michael Jordan aren't staying, you know, whatever, at the rinky-dink resort in Kauai. Like, for Michael Jordan and Pat Riley to both highlight this resort, something tells me it's a pretty extravagant, nice resort, which would also tell me that a room outside the presidential suite, the next level down, whatever suite, also might be pretty damn nice and pretty damn good. It's not as if, with all due respect, by the way, they went to a Howard Johnson's and there's one room with a couch in it. This is obviously a really nice suite, a nice hotel resort. So what a disgrace that Michael Jordan can't just settle for the next best room, that he needs to kick somebody out of the presidential suite, and then it needs to be Pat Riley. And for Pat Riley to sit there and take it also, absolutely spineless move by Michael, and even more spineless by Pat, sitting there all these years later, and we don't hear him all angry about this.
So Michael should have just been fine being closer to the ice machine. He should not have tried to bump out somebody from the presidential suite.
Look, I will never stay in a presidential suite, as we learned Connor Green may. I will never stay in a presidential suite. I don't know what the uplifting move is between regular suite and presidential suite, other than high security, what makes it so presidential. But something tells me Michael can live with whatever doesn't make it presidential to, you know, the double queen room in room 302.
Yes, if this is the hotel, it's a bad job by the hotel bumping out Pat Riley unless they comped him like another free vacation. Number two, it's a bad job by Michael Jordan because you're taking somebody else's suite that have already been there, they were there first, etc. Number three, it's a bad job by Pat Riley to suck it up and take this because Pat Riley, I hope beyond hope, that this happened to him and said, I will kill myself for the rest of my life to beat Michael Jordan at basketball because this is completely unacceptable. He's in my presidential suite right now. When we come back here on the show, we are stunned to a news. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hear the 12 DAs of Christmas as they happen.
Hi, honey.
Love
you, DA. I love you, and I'm so proud of you, and I love you to death. I love you. You know what? I love you, and I'm so proud of you, and I love you to death. I just want to say that, and I am so proud of you, and I love the United States of America.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
USA, USA. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. As always, you can listen to us in podcast form. That's right. If you miss anything, want to hear it again, you can simply go to our podcast feed. All platforms that have podcasts, whatever you use, Apple Podcasts, Radio.com, Stitcher, Spotify, other platforms, you can find us there. Just search The DA Show. Also, the best of the show, available every single day as well in condensed form. If you want to just get a quick recap, not so quick, it's more than an hour, but you get my point. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. GEICO has introduced the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit, car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. On the old tweet, Mike, even though I'm also a 49ers fan and have a lot of seasons to pick from there, my number one team in season, the 88 Mets. I was in junior high early in my fandom. That was such a great team. You know, that's one of the teams that is closest to my heart as well, Mike, as a Mets fan, because you know, that was in my early years. I was 9 years old. That team wins the National League East. They're heavily favored over the Dodgers. It looks like they're going to take a 3-1 series lead. And then Dwight Gooden gives up the game-tying home run to Mike Socia. Socia never hits home runs at Shea Stadium. If the Mets hold on to that win and Gooden does not serve up that meatball, the Mets go up 3-1 over the Dodgers, probably close that thing out, and then they face the Athletics, the A's, in the 88 World Series. Of course, you remember that is the Kirk Gibson World Series. But not meant to be, and that was the end of the 80s Mets quote-unquote dynasty. They only won one championship. They were so good for so long, but that was kind of as the door closed. But that's an interesting one. Best team ever. We have spotlighted our favorite teams and seasons ever, and it continues. Speaking of the Mets tomorrow, as Pete the Body Bilotti talks to a member of the 2015 team that went to the World Series. That was his favorite team. So can send me your favorite teams ever. I enjoy reading those. I love knowing what it was, what season that really gravitated you towards sports. We had on today Mike DeVito, who was a defensive end for that great Jets defense under Rex Ryan that went to back-to-back AFC championship games. And it was really interesting. Mike DeVito said, we were better than the Colts that year. Remember, the Colts were coming off losing the Super Bowl in 09. They had beaten the Jets in the AFC championship game. They had lost to the Saints in the Super Bowl. They came back the next year. They were 10-6. The Jets were 11-5, but a wild card because they didn't win the division. Went to Indy and beat them wild card weekend, then went to Foxborough and beat the Patriots, who were 14-2, and then went to Pittsburgh and lost at Heinz Field to the Steelers. The Steelers would end up losing to the Packers in the Super Bowl. That was the Aaron Rodgers championship. What an interesting Super Bowl that would have been had it been Packers-Jets, two teams that played in the first three Super Bowls. Kind of an old-school matchup. Now, Andrew Bogish has our headlines, and Bogues, just as a polished broadcaster, veteran broadcaster yourself, I want to get your grading on Connor Green's job interviewing Mike DeVito last hour.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to grade Connor too strongly because he is still so new at this, but as Sean and I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago when we talked on the PGP with Connor and about Connor, we do have some concern that Connor's going to get carried away with Connor.
Yeah.
If we keep glossing him so much.
Yeah, the ego.
So you guys have given him the correct amount of dues for his interview with Mike DeVito.
Okay.
Asked the correct question of Mark Sanchez at the end. It was a very, very good job by Connor dropping in, expanding his repertoire from his good 30, 45-second clips on Trash Tuesday to a long-form Connor Green, and he's one for one so far, no doubt about it.
But what you're doing is you're keeping a young buck. You don't want to inflate his ego. You don't want to pump his tires too much. You want to keep him grounded here.
Listen, we've all done one good interview with a B-level defensive lineman 10 years later.
Okay.
So do a second one, and then we'll go from there.
Do it again. Do it
again.
Prove yourself again. Do it again.
Yes. Do it.
Yeah, do it again, okay. Scott Burrell.
Okay, I like your coaching there. I like it. Do it again. Let's see if he can do it again. You know, it's not enough to win one game. Win another game. Win another game.
Yeah.
That's how you start stacking Pro Bowl seasons.
I would also say, Connor, just do not hire Bogus's agent. If you want the best future possible, do not go down that Bogus road.
One might argue get an agent. Since Bogus doesn't have one, maybe getting one is really the hurdle to get over.
I want to ask you this, Bogues. Do you think in one fell swoop, though, today, Connor pushed ahead of Mraz on the food chain?
No, I think Connor pushed ahead of Pete on the food chain.
I see.
I'm not sure that Pete's Kelly Johnson interview is going to rally him past Connor. I think Connor has jumped Pete. For now, with me and Sean in his sights.
In his sights next. What do you think about the Mraz quote, he's better than me at this, and this being radio?
Well, see, now you're asking me to do another uncomfortable thing, which is be nice to Sean, and I don't want to do that either.
Okay.
But Connor has not passed Sean yet, all things considered. Did he maybe ask more succinct questions than me or Sean did to Mike Richter or Jesse Armstead? Sure. But does he bring everything to the table that Sean does? He's got the ability to. We haven't heard him do it just yet. So I'm perfectly calm and comfortable saying that he has jumped Pete, and then he moves on to me and Sean, or Sean and me, wherever we lie. We're next in danger of being usurped by Connor.
So he's hunting us all, is what you're saying.
He's hunting us all. I'm assuming by... not the 4th of July. 4th of July is still too soon. Plus, who knows where we're all going to be. But by Labor Day, Connor will be here doing this show.
Yeah.
Just him, while we all can go to sleep, comfortable that Connor is here in control of things and doing at least a quality show.
You know, Pete gave us all of his days off this summer. He's off for like 2.5 months. He should watch.
He should just tell us when he's going to be here.
Yeah, that's right.
As opposed to off.
Yeah.
Right.
Tuesday, August 13th, I'll be there. And 4 days into July, I'll be there. Other than that, I'm off. He better watch out because Connor's now nipping at his heels. And as you said, you know, you might want to rerun it
rerun back on that schedule and take some days off that were off and come back to work.
Well, remember, he also controls putting Connor on the schedule, so he also has the power. You know, we could get a – if all of a sudden 2 weeks we've seen a lot of James Boccioni's in this spot, there's a chance Pete has spoken silently from behind his Excel spreadsheet.
Basically, Pete is going to Al Davis, Connor Green, like Marcus Allen. Just bury him on the bench in his prime, never be seen again. And we don't know why. What happened to Connor Green's career? He got totally sidetracked. He never got played by Pete.
I just don't like him.
Connor was the Dr. Fauci of sports radio. He got too big for his britches, and Pete sidelined him.
I just don't like him.
Yeah, who knows? Connor's just never on the schedule anymore. I haven't seen that kid in like 18 months or so.
I just don't like him.
Pete buried him.
Pete blames his availability.
He's just working overnight, pushing buttons on some syndicated program.
I just don't like him.
Well, that can be your this date in mothership history 5 years from now is, where is Connor? We thought things were going so well with the Mike DeVito interview, and he's never been back.
You're going to see an SI, where are they now? Connor Green, the prodigy that flamed out.
He is Greg Jeffries.
He writes a letter to CBS Sports Radio that we read over the air that he was unfairly treated. All right, Bogues, you have our headline. So what do we got today?
So Tom Brady made the shot of the day, holing out from the fairway for a birdie on number 7, but then he split his pants retrieving his ball. Brady battled the most yesterday. He and Phil Mickelson technically losing to Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning. But all that matters is the $20 million they raised for COVID-19 relief efforts in rainy Florida. That included some special pledges called in by the likes of Alex Rodriguez, Russell Wilson, J.J. Watt, and Brooks Koepka. It actually went 607 miles, NASCAR's longest race, ending in overtime last night thanks to a caution flag with 2 laps left in regulation. Chase Elliott was leading then, but left for new tires. Brad Keselowski jumped in front, held off Jimmy Johnson for the win, his first at the track.
I feel like I've had the shot to win this race, you know, probably 4 or 5 times. And last year we led a bunch of this race and probably were the favorite to win it late and had a loose wheel and, you know, just didn't come together for whatever reason. But today it came together and I'm super, super thankful.
The race also had an early 90-minute rain delay, so the checkered flag didn't drop until after midnight Eastern. Johnson went from second to last when his rear alignment didn't pass post-race inspection. His winless drought is now 102 races. The Xfinity Series runs at Charlotte tonight, the Cup Series back there on Wednesday. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said yesterday his pro teams can reopen their training facilities as soon as they're ready. Only the Nets have announced plans so far. They're building open tomorrow for voluntary individual workouts. And the Washington Nationals unveiled their World Series rings last night, 23.2 carats worth of diamonds, rubies, and sapphires. And they're made, is it Josens, Jossens? Either way, it's hilarious because those guys made my high school ring. That same company. And they're out here now making championship rings with diamonds, rubies, and sapphires. So I'm impressed. They had that kind of range. My rinky-dink high school ring and a blinged-out Nationals World Series ring.
Okay, so you decided to get a high school ring. We were offered the high school ring as well. I decided against it. None of my friends got it, so I didn't really feel like I wanted it. I don't wear jewelry anyway, so I just never really – I never wanted one. Mraz, did you buy your class ring?
No, there was a distinct line. Nerds bought it. Those who weren't nerds did not. So
I don't know anybody that got our high school class ring. In fact, I can't even think of one person that bought it totally. So Bogues, was this a popular idea or did you just always want a class ring?
No, I mean, I went to a high school that you had to get it, like I think a test to get into. So I was one of the, like in my school, I was Sean. Everyone else was a nerd.
Wow.
So everyone else was buying the, like no one didn't buy the ring.
Wow. So you were
and,
the
like,
stupid
kid. We
had
kid. Options. Yeah. Huh. So we had options to like put in. You could put
I thought he
designs,
meant cool
like,
kid,
in...
not stupid kid.
No, no. He meant last kid academically.
No, I thought he meant that he was a cool kid in school.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Yeah, no, we went all out. Like, we had people put, like, designs underneath the stone. You could put, like, a baseball or a basketball if you played a sport.
Whoa.
Like, yeah, people did. No, everybody got the ring. Now, where is my ring today? No idea. That I wear it after actual graduation ceremony and maybe my, like my graduation party? No, and I have no idea where it is right now.
So, in retrospect, good idea or bad idea to buy the ring?
I mean, it wasn't my money, so my mom probably is mad that we paid for it.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it is, but I'm okay either way.
Did you keep your tassel from graduation?
Any of that stuff, if it's in my mom's house or it's nowhere. It's long gone.
I meant to keep it, but I lost it graduation day, and so I had it for, you know, maybe 6 hours or so.
Oh, and you know what?
We all hung it from our rearview mirrors. That was our
thing. Right, that was a big thing. But I lost it on day number one. Mraz, do you still have your tassel?
I believe I have my cap, gown, and tassel somewhere in this house. I saw it when I moved in. Yeah, it made the trip.
So here's another nerdy thing. We graduated high school. We wore tuxedos, like white dinner jackets and a bow tie and pants. Yeah, only in college did I have a cap and gown. And I don't think any of that survived graduation.
Wow, so you guys were like a bunch of James Bonds that graduated?
Yeah, let's go with that. James Bonds. That's a good assessment.
But white suit jacket, black bow tie, black pants?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. What a look.
It's terrible.
Like you guys were stewards on the Titanic. What an interesting look for graduation. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And now, I think it's time. Why don't we be studs?
Yeah!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
I actually am stunned to this. I saw this story over the week and I said, I am stunned that they did this.
So a nice Virginia family takes a little joyride recently. Get out of the house, stretch their legs, break their quarantine boredom. As they're rolling down the highway in their Virginia neighborhood, a car in front of them swerves out of the way of a bag in the street. They can't swerve fast enough. They run over the bag. They're good people. They think it's just garbage. It's a hazard in the street. They get out. Dad throws the bag in the back of the pickup. They keep driving on. Quickly, they see another bag, side of the road, pick it up, throw in the back, and keep going. Eventually, they get home, they get to the back of the pickup to throw out these two bags they found in the street. As they're looking inside, they find out that these two bags are full of money.
Unreal.
And what do they do? Because they're good people and they were just cleaning
Unreal.
Up the street for fun.
Unreal.
They call the police and say, we just found two bags of money. The police come, they count it. It's almost $1 million in cash.
Incredible.
The police say they know where the money was supposed to be going. They don't know how it ended up on the street. And they hope the people whose money it is eventually will reward this family. But who knows if that'll happen. The bottom line is, I mean, you look in there and there's like wads of, you know, $10,000 of rope together. Just grab one or two. No one's going to know they're missing. Grab one or two, if not the whole thing, but at least keep a little for yourself. And maybe they did and we don't know about it. I hope they did.
This is an incredible story. Apparently, they think that this was not like a drug dealer's bags of cash or some type of hitman or something. This fell off of like a Brinks truck or out of a
right,
truck.
It was going to a bank, it seems like.
Yeah, which is weird that a bank truck would just lose two bags of money out the back and not all of them or something like that. That just seems like an odd thing that the door opens up or something. But anyway, I really thought about this, what I would do if I found bags of cash. And my first inclination would be, boy, can they trace the money if I keep this? And then do I get in trouble if I keep the cash? So I would be a little paranoid. But if I found two bags worth $1 million, I would really hem and haw about whether I would tell anybody about this. I mean, would you guys bring the cash back?
No, absolutely not. And I would pay for stuff in cash going forward as a way to wash the money. I've watched enough Ozark and stuff. There's no way I'm bringing this back.
So you wouldn't worry about it being traced? You wouldn't worry about getting into trouble?
No, in fact, and I know Bogus has to go in a couple minutes. I have a great story about this that my father scolded me once for doing this, so I will never do that again. Absolutely, I would not be worried about the tracing. In fact, maybe I go to a casino and start gambling a little bit, lose a little bit, and then cash out and get different money so I get traced. Don't have a trace back.
Hmm. Bogus,
so
would you
full Ozark storyline here with the casino and everything?
Absolutely. I'm keeping that money. Finders keepers, losers weepers.
Would you?
So, I mean, I know you can't keep this money. I know you can't.
What, ethically,
you mean? We've stored this before. Like, no, like, you, like, you're not allowed to keep found money. I mean, they I don't know what trouble you would get into, but if they did find out that you had it, you'd have to give it back and theoretically repay whatever you have spent so far. So the play here is you keep all of it, or you do what they did and call the police and maybe keep a little tiny bit, because the police can't ever know exactly what was in the bag when you found it. But I still think I would be way too afraid that I'd be tracked down through a serial number or something. Since it looked official, it was wrapped, it had notes on it, like, to the cash vault. Like, I would think that they'd be able to find that money and then somehow find me, and I'd get in trouble.
All right. Thanks, Bogues. Great stunt to a news. You know, Mraz, there's a lot of layers to this, because I think it also begs the question, where did the money come from? If you are, if this is bank money going from somebody who earned this legitimately, going to their investment, you know, this is going towards the purchase of a home, the purchase of a yacht. I mean, I know $1 million is a lot of money, but still, that if we believe it's just earned honestly and truthfully, you do feel like you should return it.
I agree.
If I could guarantee that this was from a drug deal, or this was from, you know, a hitman, or this was from, I'm trying to think of other, you know,
like something something unethical that they'd be making
unsavory,
the money with.
Yes, an unsavory occupation where you would exchange millions of dollars in cash, then I would feel a lot less bad about keeping it, and knowing that I don't think a drug dealer is going to trace his, maybe he would, I don't know.
Wait, if it's from the cartel or something, it's funny because...
Well, they trace the $1 million if you could be in danger of it. I mean, ethically, you'd feel better keeping drug money.
Yes. And
or murder money.
My guess would be whoever the driver is that dropped this money along the side of the highway would be the one, if you will, to have to answer to said cartel than you would.
So what happened with your dad?
So true story, I'm in junior high, seventh grade, walking across the field at rec, and I find DA a $100 bill in the middle of the grass.
Okay.
I decide, oh, man, this stinks. Somebody lost $100 bill. I'm a nice kid, seventh grade. I go to the principal's office, and I give back the $100 bill. I said, somebody at school lost $100. I want to give this back. As it turns out, we never did find out who had that money. It could have been somebody walking by. It could have been a drug deal or something in the neighborhood. The school drew me up this whole certificate of, like, making me, like, an honor, not like an honor student, but some kind of, like, medal of whatever. And I got this big certificate because I did such a good deed. And I was so proud to bring this home, right?
Yeah.
Mom gets it. She's so excited. Wow, good job. My dad gets home from work. I show my dad. My dad, to this day, has never been more furious with me in my life. He looks at me. Dad, he goes, what did you do? I said, Dad, I found $100 in the middle of the field. I brought it back. He goes, you could afford to give up $100 when you find it in the middle of the field? I said, no, but it wasn't my money. He said, did you pick it up? I said, yes. He goes, then it was your money. And he was so ticked off that I could, you know, flip my nose at $100. He goes, whoever wanted that money obviously didn't want it bad enough that they allowed it to be dropped. And this was his lesson of life to me.
Wow.
So much so, DA, that within a week – and this is so perfect. We go to McDonald's. You know, it's a big Schwartz family outing for us.
Yeah.
And in the parking lot, you know, the tables outside of McDonald's is a $20 bill. My father picks up the $20 bill, turns to me and goes, this is what you should have done. Put it right in his pocket and paid for our dinner at McDonald's.
Wow. Wow.
Within a week, it was like he had somebody plant the 20 there to teach me a lesson. And that was something that stuck with me. My father didn't teach me a lot growing up. You know, sports, you know, some grilling. The one thing that's always stuck with me is if you find
deli
money in the street. Exactly. Bob the Deli Man will always tell you, unless you could afford not to put that money in your pocket, you put that money in your pocket. So that was what I learned a long time ago. As I'm so proud of this, like, honor the school had given me.
Boy, I wonder if that's when your ethics just took a total nosedive as a human being.
I'm sure they did. And now, like, the flip side of that is if it was my money, I would be thrilled if somebody had found it back. But yeah, man, it was bad. It was a bad news when I thought that was a good certificate to show my father. I was almost punished.
Would you be worried they could trace the cash?
Part of you should be. But I think ultimately so. You could be smart about it, DA.
Yeah. What's the best way to wash $1 million?
Well, it's not bring it to the bank and deposit it into your account. It stacks under the mattress. And you proceed for other things maybe you'd be swiping your debit card for to just start paying cash all over the place. And I honestly think going to a casino and saying, all right, give me $1,000 in chips, losing $100 and then cashing out for the $900 and doing that periodically over a year, I think is the best way to do it, because once that money's in a casino, not to get all movie on us, but there's no way to trace that back.
No, okay. So casinos are a good place to exchange a lot of money without somebody, you know, putting up their eyebrow. I guess you're right. You try to pay cash for as much stuff as possible, but not in one huge lump sum. Like, you don't buy like a car for $50,000
in
cash.
No.
You just, whatever you could use cash for on a daily basis, you try to use the cash.
And also, like, let's say you have it in stacks of $10,000. This is going way out of the, don't use back-to-back bills. Use them at a different stack. So it doesn't have succinct serial numbers back to back to back to back to back.
Okay.
So, you know, you want to go to a Best Buy or a Target and buy a nice TV for like $800. That might be okay, but you better separate the bills there and not pay with like eight straight $100 bills.
The issue is, like, you can't pay your mortgage in cash.
No.
And you can't also deposit this into your account. So you have to find other ways to do this.
Yes, I think gambling at a casino is the best way to wash it, but ultimately other stuff, everyday stuff that you would normally be swiping your card and taking out of your account, you start paying cash for with this cash and the money gets spread out all over the place.
Try to investigate you.
When we come back, we'll 4th and 15 pass this week in the NFL, and if you have an idea about how to wash $1 million worth of cash that you find in a bag on the road, tweet at me, DA on CBS. This is the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
If one neighbor's not burning the day you need to cook your crow, just ask your next neighbor when they're going to be burning and clearing. If one neighbor's not burning, then the next day the your other neighbor's liable to be burning.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's burning season, so says Torg Bellinger. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. A little reminder this morning, the Home Depot is here to help, and they have many ways to do that. You can download the app, go online for the essential products and information you need. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. I've been on Home Depot's website a lot recently, buying some tools for the yard to make sure I am ready to go as shrubbery blooms and things need to get cleared and garden work and yard work is here for the spring and summer, so check that out. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. And don't forget, you can submit a question by going to our Twitter handle, DA on CBS, and tweeting me, at DA on CBS. You can use the hashtag as well, Ask the Pros. This week, NFL owners will attempt on voting Thursday, which would eliminate the onside kick, giving teams a chance to keep possession by converting 4th and 15 from their own 25-yard line. Tom Pelissero tweeted, updated language of the proposed rule change. It doesn't specify that a team must be trailing to attempt it. It's a limit of 2 tries per game, but this would open up strategic options. So you can go for it on 4th and 15 twice in a game, instead of kicking the onside kick. It needs a 75% yes vote to pass. The proposal went to vote last year. The competition committee voted 7-1 in favor, but the owners voted it down. So we shall see if owners turn the cheek on this and voted in coming up on Thursday. Remember, the Alliance used this 2 years ago. The XFL used this as well. And right now, onside kicks have been at about a 6% completion rate, successful rate. That over the last 2 years, since you have been unable to load one side, I saw Pro Football Talk said over the last 2 years, the success rate has dropped to 6%. Meantime, before the changes, the onside kick, recovering was at about 21%. So you had a 1 in 5 chance once upon a time. Now it's 6 in 100. Meantime, 4th and 15s were converted about 20, 8% of the time last year. Before that, if you go back the last 5 years, about 24% of the time. So let's just average it out to, it's about a 25% clip. One out of every four chances converting fourth and 15 versus 6% of the onside kick. I want to talk about this coming up here after the break. Will this pass and should this pass? Personally, I like it, but I'm not so sure you guys do. We'll get into that next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.